Charlotte, soccer show, John Hayes, Danny Brams. It's another Tuesday morning edition of the show, and we're happy to be here despite Danny, it being after a tough loss against 10-man Miami. It's great to see you. You look good today. I love that shirt that you're rocking on the show today. Is that the Cerminti shirt, or that the giveaway shirt last season?
The Cerminti giveaway deluxe. Yeah, and I was given this. I actually didn't get this at the stadium. This was given to me by a good friend of ours that we both know. And yeah, John, it is tough to be here on a beautiful Tuesday morning, but we're calling this one Messi and the missed opportunity. There was no Messi, and there was a missed opportunity, unfortunately, in Miami, as everyone pretty much thought we were going to get 3 points when Charlotte FC went up a man, but was not to be. And we're going to get into all that. I got my Summit coffee here that I'm rocking and rolling, and it's great to see you, Johnny.
It's great to see you too, and we've got a lot to discuss today. We're going to talk about the loss, kind of what it means for this club as it heads to play Cincinnati on Saturday night at the Keep. The tough games keep rolling for Charlotte FC. Forget about how Cincinnati has played so far this season. It's a good club. It's a rivalry match. It's the Queen City Derby on the horizon for this club. So the matches are coming fast and furious right now. We're going to get into that. We're going to talk about the red card. We're going to take a look back at it and discuss what could have been a potential goal. You know, if the goalie doesn't take out Wilfried Zaha there, does Zaha finish that opportunity? It's a great ball in by Pep Bial as well. We're going to hear from Westy. We're going to hear from Dean. Patrick Ajimong, Danny, still yet to score this season. 3 matches in, are you concerned? I'm going to ask you that question later in the show. So start thinking about that as well. We need to get into this Apple TV deal. There was an anonymous survey of GMs yesterday published by The Athletic. Some interesting comments there. And it's something that I discussed on ESPN 730 The Game when they asked me on a couple weeks ago, Danny. They brought up this Apple TV deal and whether it's good for MLS or not. That's going to be a big picture topic later in the show. But first, should it have been 3 points on Sunday afternoon down in Miami, Danny?
I think so, John. I think so. Together watching. We were in separate locations, but I was just kind of posted up at the house watching. I had some things going on Sunday, so I posted up at the house, and I really loved everything I was watching the first half in terms of effort and control and the way Charlotte FC was making an impact on the game and doing well on the road. And then when the red card happens just shortly before halftime, all of a sudden the texts start coming. You texted me. Other friends are texting me. I'm sending texts, and the consensus in the air, in the ether around this whole community was 3 points. Got to be 3 points. Would have been happy with a draw going in, but now that they're down to 10 men, we need 3 points. And everyone kind of was like, okay, this second half, it's time to jump on them. We won the first half, you could say, not on the scoreboard, but on most of the stats. And we thought, hey, they're down a man. It's Suarez looks like he's maybe even hurt. Suarez was down on the ground for a long time at the end of the first half. He's old. Messi's not on the pitch. And we're just thinking like, man, this is our chance to go take 3 against the Supporter Shield holders. And it didn't happen, John. Charlotte FC fell asleep to start the second half kickoff. We're going to look at that highlight. We got a couple highlights that we're going to tee up for y'all. But first, I think we want to get into the reactions, right? Because just knowing what happened, it's a bad result, but it's surprising reactions. I was expecting to see in the post-game comments from Dean Smith and Ashley Westwood, who came to address media, I was like, these guys are going to be so pissed. They're going to be like ripping a new a-hole, and they're going to be like, this, we blew it. But they were both actually surprisingly calm for me, and I get that it's kind of like early in the season, so you don't necessarily want to overreact, but we got a couple clips here from Westwood and Dean Smith that I want you to play them, John, and then I want to react, because the surprising reactions, and maybe we might even have to criticize some of those reactions. It depends what you think.
Well, let's start with Ashley Westwood, the captain, who's always asked to take the microphone after a disappointing loss for this club, and he does so he does so admirably, for sure. But I'm curious what you think, and what some of our TIFOs, our tremendous friends of the show, think about this comment post-match.
People say it. People that haven't played the game will say, oh, you should beat 10 men, but it's not that easy. You see top teams playing against 10 men. It's hard to break teams down. when they've got 10 men in the box, it's including the goalkeeper. It's tough. And
It is tough. It's interesting comments from Ashley Westwood there. And before we react to that, I think it's important to hear from Dean Smith on this as well, because you know he's somebody that also spent time abroad playing in the English Premier League like Ashley Westwood did. And yes, I think they're right. In those scenarios, sometimes in a Premier League stadium on the road, getting 3 points and beating a 10-man squad is difficult. Is it the same in MLS? I don't know. Here's Dean Smith's comparison.
I've seen Manchester City with 10, 50 million plus outfielders play against Arsenal with 10 men, and it took them to the 98th minute to score a goal. It's difficult when you've got players who are capable of defending the box like they did.
So here's the question. Are these excuses? I'm trying to figure out exactly what the point of bringing this up, both the captain and the manager post game after a tough 1-0 loss on the road against 10-man messy list Miami, where Suarez gets subbed off and you're playing against a team that, yes, won the supporter shield, but who knows how good they are this season, right in this moment. Are these excuses? That's what I'm trying to figure out, Danny. Do they feel like excuses to you?
Bit of an excuse, isn't it? Yeah, it feels like an excuse to me. I think, again, there's some grace given for the fact that it's early in the season and you don't want to overreact, but I really wanted to see some fire from these guys and not downplay what happened. Because this, as a fan, I was crushed. And I think a lot of fans were crushed. Like, how could this have happened? How could we have lost to a 10-man team that does that their best, you know, the world, their number one world-class player is not even on the pitch. So yeah, it reeks a little bit of excuse making to me. I mean, Westwood busting out, and I love Ashley Westwood and I love Dean. Everybody knows that, but I got to call it like I see it. And for Westwood to give the tired old, oh, people who haven't played the game don't know. I always hate that. You know, I didn't play the game at any really type of high level whatsoever, but I have played sports before and I know the way things work, and I just don't like that whole idea of like, well, if you haven't played the game, you're not allowed to comment on it. Even if I had, if you haven't played the game, you know, if you're an intelligent person, you know what you're looking at. So I always the hair on the back of my neck stands up anytime I hear that. And then for Dino to make the Man City comparison, I mean, Miami's good, but they're not Man City, and Charlotte FC is nice, but we're not Arsenal. So it's like that. That's another comparison that does rings kind of hollow with me. So not a huge fan of either of the guys' comments there, even though I love both guys in general. So, yeah, and I just side note, I was watching that game that he referenced, that Man City Arsenal game. I was watching that at Hop Fly, and but it was, I think it was a couple hours before a Charlotte FC match, and we were getting ready to pre-party for a Charlotte match, and I was watching that match with like Kiefer and Gesslin and a few folks, and like it really sucked when that Man City goal went in off of a corner kick, but. This was not that. This was not that. This was not, dogged defending and like really getting stuck in and holding off a team that we really, as far as Charlotte FC is concerned, we did not present much of a threat even against the 10 men. We did have a tough time. It is tough to break down the box, but at a certain point you have to do it. And there's a couple chances that we will show after we show some other highlights. And Charlotte FC had their chances, and there was a big Patrick Ajimong miss, and Toklamadi went off the post, and we could have gotten there, but we didn't get there. And I just wanted to see more fire in the post game reaction.
Well, it's one thing to say that it's difficult to beat 10 men on the road against a low block. I think that is true. It doesn't mean that it's improbable. Actually, I think it's probable, and the statistics back that up, especially when it's a first half red card. You're talking about a team that gets a first half red card loses, 60-70% of the time, for sure. And specifically, when I think about these post game comments, I just wish. You mentioned those tough breaks, those big chances missed. Ajimong's header just wide. Toklamadi hits the post. Like, I think potentially you could call this loss unlucky, and that Charlotte should have at least got a point out of this game. And I think that attitude in the post-match press conference would have been more appropriate than lecturing the fans about how difficult it is to beat a 10-man side. I thought that was a little bit of bush league. And I felt like it was talking down to the fan base. Like, this fan base isn't necessarily educated about the sport of soccer. Because there's a difference, Danny, between not beating 10 men and going up a man, conceding a goal, and losing to 10 men. There's a big difference between the two of those things. And I just felt like those comments in the post-game press conferences by both the captain and the manager were a little bit off the mark.
Yeah, and they both said in other spots in those pressers, they said, you know, we didn't deserve to lose. We didn't deserve to lose. We didn't deserve to lose. A point would have been at least the minimum that we deserved. But it's not about deserved. It's about what you did. And I don't know. I just think everything you said there just rings very true for me with the fact that it's not all red cards are created equal, right? And I'm going to call up the highlight here.
Please do.
We'll just watch it as we go. Look at that pass from Pepe, by the way, just a total blind pass into perfect space for Zaha. But, did this red card change the game for the worse is the question I'm asking. And
no, absolutely not. I mean, what kind of question is that, Danny? This is a huge moment for Charlotte FC in this match. It's our designated player, Wilfred Zaha, making a moment on the road at Miami. He earns a red card. By the way, something that Enzo Copetti had no ability to do whatsoever. This is how you win a foul and get a player sent off. This is a professional move. Would he have scored that goal? Potentially, there was an open net there. It would have had to have been a nice finish for sure. But no, this is did not ruin the game. This made the game. This sure made the game winnable for Charlotte FC. This was exactly what we needed in the first half to get a big time result on the road against Miami. And yeah, I'll leave it at that. And Abada was right there as well. It was a great opportunity. And for some reason, Danny, for some reason, after the red card happens and Miami's goalkeepers gets sent off, we don't see a lot of action moving forward from Charlotte FC until about the 70th minute.
Yeah, and Dean did comment on that as well. He said, he admitted at one point, he said, you know, we weren't quick enough to get numbers forward in the second half after we went down 1-0. We'll look at the goal in a moment, but yeah, it's a clear red card. It's a great pass from Pep Biel. It's a smart professional play by Wilf to draw the foul and to force the goalkeeper to make that poor decision. And Liel Abad is there, as you said, and he's a little bit in the way. But, you know, Miami defenders are shrieking back. But even on VAR, they upheld the red card. So
it was clear as day. I mean, it's the easiest red you're ever going to call. I mean,
and it's right before half.
Yeah, I mean, the MLS referees are so bad. And this call was so easy. There was just no question whatsoever. Yeah. It's just like there was no controversy here. Mm-hmm. Both managers could see the replay. Both teams could understand. Yes, that's a clear last man automatic red foul for sure on Wilfred Zaha, a clear goal scoring opportunity. What did Westy say about Wilf after the match?
Westy on Wilf, he said, we got to do better. He said, we've got those comments. If you want to queue them up, he said, you know, Wilf is a guy that is making defenders into forcing them into tough spots, and we've got to do better. Once you queue up exactly what he said.
He looked bright, Wolf did. I mean, he attracts three men, and he said, we need to maybe be better at when he's attracting men. We need to have a bounce off him just so he can set him and give it again. Cause he likes 1-2s as do all the top players. So again, it's only his second game, and we're learning how he plays, and like I said, but he looked sharp again today. And like I said, I thought Leal looked very good as well. I must admit, he was a threat down that side today.
He was such a threat down that side that he got taken off against 10 men, our designated player in the second half there, couldn't finish the full 90 and score a goal.
Yeah. Dean praised Leal also. I think we're going to hear that when he's talking about Tokla. He was asked about Toklamani and he praised Leal. I didn't think Leal played that well. We will look at everyone's ratings. I thought Leal was mid. I thought Bronico was unfortunately below average performance for him. And I thought Ream was below average for him as well. As far as what Westy said about Wilf, I agree. We got to do better to play around a superstar player like that. And Wilf was getting fouled. He was, you know, everyone made a big point. He was fouled 6 times. Somehow there's this new rule in MLS called targeting where you're supposed to get a yellow card if you foul the same player 5 times. It happened to Charlotte FC against Almiron. Charlotte FC was booked for targeting Almiron in the Atlanta match.
Can I just interrupt you for a second? That's not a new, like, this is why this is how MLS becomes so gimmicky and so bush league, Danny. This is not a new rule. This is how refereeing in soccer works. Like when a player is getting fouled a lot, specifically by the same player, that player, the referee will give him 2-3 fouls and then ultimately say, you know what, quit it. Here's a yellow card. You're fouling too much. There's nothing that needs to be in the rule book about targeting a player and fouling them a lot. Like if you want to build it out over, like it doesn't even have to be the same player, right? If one player has fouled Wilf 6-7 times and another player comes in and fouls him again, right. Yeah, probably don't give that same player a yellow card, that new player a yellow card. But if that new player fouls him again, you're guilty by association. That's good refereeing. Something that, again, this league doesn't have. So, of course, they're trying to make up some bullshit gimmicky rule around targeting and yellow cards. It's soccer, Danny. It's not difficult. Okay. Like it's, and it goes back to the comparison. It goes back to the comparison that I made when Wilfred Zaha was signed. Like I said, there was one player. There is a player. Everyone talked about wanting Jack Grealish. We want Jack Grealish in Charlotte. We should sign Jack Grealish in Charlotte. I said Wilfred Zaha is the closest thing to Jack Grealish at Aston Villa for this reason. This is exactly what's going to happen all season long. This is exactly what happened to Jack Grealish when he was in the championship playing for Dean Smith. This is exactly what happened to Jack Grealish when he went to the Premier League and played for Dean Smith. Zaha is going to get fouled game after game, over and over, and that's a strength of his game. That's not a problem. That's not an issue, right? This is a good thing for this club, right. Especially when Zaha's in a forward position, getting fouled over and over, and gives Westwood a chance to get on a free kick and swing a ball into the box. This is a good thing.
Yeah, and it happened, and they fouled him within the first 30 seconds of the match, and they kept fouling him. He got frustrated by the end. I do want to address. I saw some chatter and some Charlotte FC chats that were like, "Oh, Zaha, he's just another Capetti rolling around on the ground, you know, smacking the ground with both hands and flopping." Totally different situation in my book. I don't think Zaha was flopping at all. I think he was being cynically fouled over and over and over again because guys are scared of him. No one was scared of Copetti with the ball at his feet. Copetti was a guy who can run in behind and finish a goal, but no one was ever scared that Copetti was going to like make some magic happen the way they are with Wilf Zaha, and that's why they don't let Zaha get the ball, and that's why Wilf is asking to get the ball quicker before guys are on him, before they can foul him. So I agree with what you're saying. Everything you just said is spot on. What Westy said about the DP is spot on about how the players need to do a better job of bouncing off him and playing him in 1-2s. But really, I have no qualms with Zaha's performance. We're going to see a highlight on the Patrick miss a little bit later here that he put one of the best cross of the game. He put the ball on a tee for Pat's head, and it was beautiful. And I don't think that was the problem. I think the real problem in this match was everything that happened at halftime. I don't know how you go into a half up a man and you get, okay, like just like I was talking about, you and I were shooting texts and all the TIFOs around the world were shooting texts back and forth and saying 3 points, 3 points, 3 points. I wish I knew what was said in that locker room, because the way they came out at the second half, and you can tee up the goal here if you want to play the clip, because the squad came out and just was completely asleep to start the second half kick right after kickoff.
It means Luan, we know that he can play that right-sided centre-back position, so he'll go over to there and pray, then just go to the right-back position. It makes sense as well, because we spoke about in the first half with Avalez, he gets targeted by opposition players.
Allende to bring this ball down cleanly, gets it back from Suarez, chested down, Tony Allende, go! How's that right out of the gate, second half, and Inter Miami strikes first, playing with 10.
Coming out of the dressing room late, not in this situation, it was Charlotte that were caught cold, and it's the initial ball from Luan, who we just mentioned going into that centre-back position, and then the link-up between both Allende and Suarez is absolutely brilliant. Watch this ball from Suarez. He knows that both centre-backs are out of the equation because Allende plays the ball and continues his run. He knows if he makes the run, Suarez is going to find him. He does that, then he finds the back of the net.
That's a friend of the show, Danny Higginbotham, by the way, on that call saying Charlotte came out cold. He nailed the analysis. You don't need us to hear it, say it on this show. He nailed it right in the moment that Charlotte FC comes out of the locker room cold, gives up an egregious goal here. And it's it's the first time I think on this show that we've ever started a goal highlight with the kickoff at center
field.
It happened that quickly. And if you got up at halftime to go get a cold beverage or to make yourself an afternoon snack on a Sunday afternoon, maybe get dinner started in the kitchen. And I wanted to point this out. Like there's a huge moment there. You see Miami's manager, their new manager this season, celebrating because he knows that this goal changed everything. It gave Miami belief. And at halftime, I would imagine Miami felt like, you know what, maybe we can get a draw out of this game. Maybe we can hunker down and try to get at least a point. And then all of a sudden, Miami gets this goal 15 seconds into the second half. And the mindset switches from, okay, how do we get a point out of this game to how do we hold Charlotte FC and have a clean sheet at home? And they figured out a way to do it.
Yeah, and as we watch these replays here on YouTube, if you're listening audio only, we always appreciate you. This is an episode you might want to go and watch the YouTube if you're not already, because this highlight – I just like as we watch and watch and watch, and you see Mascherano, he knows exactly what it means, like you said. But look at a defender and pick a defender that doesn't get burned here. I mean, the long ball from center back goes perfectly over Reem's head. Milanda's too slow to be him and Privet have no partnership there. Burn is not even on the screen, and it's a nice little back heel from Allende, the eventual goal scorer, to sort of like get the ball back. And Suarez is a veteran. Suarez is a world-class player who's always going to do the right thing in that situation. And, you know, Kalina, you know, shades of a handball, but I think it was, I thought it was handball for a second just because I believe in Cali, but the replay shows he got it nicely off the chest. But like, you don't expect Adilson Milanda to be that caught out of position. He just, right off the kickoff, he just kind of drifted up towards the center line too far. Reem, not necessarily his fault that the ball goes over his head. It was a really, really nice long ball pass from center back, obviously, but Burn got burned. I don't know really where Burn was. If you watch him from the start, he's kind of, you know.
Yeah, I don't think there's – let's not place individual blame on this play, Danny. This is a backline issue. There's four players.
Right, it's everybody. Defense. Yeah, it's everybody. And it's a really nice play as well. I mean, it's a nice link up between Allende and Suarez.
It is. It's a nice 2-on-4. Exactly. And you get it done. You score the goal with a 2-on-4, 2-on-5 if you count the goalkeeper in that situation. Yeah. Let's hear from Dean Smith after the game. I want to hear what he thinks about this goal.
I think the game would have been probably the same in the second half anyway, but it just gave them something to hold on to a little bit, and probably made us a little bit too wary of a counter-attack, and we probably didn't commit enough numbers forward in the first 10, 15 minutes of the second half.
Well, that was a really, I think, smart thing to say, where, yes, we probably didn't commit enough numbers forward. But I also want to make the point, can we not play scared against 10 men?
Right.
Can we not worry about the counterattack? Can we just go for it? Because you lost anyway. You played scared and you lost anyway.
Right. Who cares? I mean, if you go down 2-0 to 10 men, I mean – You know, who cares?
You send even more forward. You might as well go down three.
Exactly. And I will give Dean credit for admitting that. I'll give credit. I think the substitute, you and I were talking during that second half, and it was like, you were like, Dean will show his intent with the substitutions. You're like, if he plays for just the draw here against 10 men, it's going to piss me off. And I don't think he played for the draw. I think eventually Dean's substitution pattern showed he's made very attacking offensive subs, pulled off, you know, defensive players trying to get offensive attacking firepower in there. Tokomati came in, Tavares came in, Kerwin Vargas eventually came in. And I think for the most part, Dean got it right, but maybe could have been a little quicker. Because that's another thing that you texted me. It was like, we need to go now. And it's like, you fall behind in the 46th minute. You don't wait until the 70th minute. Like, okay, now we got to turn it on. And it's like, once we started really getting after it and like really putting the pressure on in the final 20 minutes, you're like, where was this 20 minutes ago? As soon as you go down 1-0, you got to turn it on and you got to like react immediately. You got to address it and not be asleep.
Right. Yes. And they finally woke up. Charlotte FC did, and had a couple big chances in the second half that we alluded to. Here's one from Patrick Ajima.
Sun has dipped behind the grandstand now as we watch Biel with his team down a goal. Zaha works it across, headed just wide, and there was the chance for Patrick Adjiman, looking for his first of the year.
You can see his reaction to it. He's got his head in his hands. It's a wonderful ball from Zaha. He knows that he should at least be testing Reyes Novo. He gets himself into a really good position, but he just can't find that bottom corner. He'll be desperately disappointed that he didn't hit the target, because it's a big opportunity for him.
Oof. That's a rough one.
Man, everything about that play is absolutely perfect, except for where the ball ends up.
Yeah.
When it crosses the end line there. One thing to note, Danny, for sure, is that Wilfried Zaha is quality on that left-hand side, and you see it here with an absolute perfect delivery to Patrick Adjiman in the center of the box. Puts it right on a platter there for him, and I think Patrick does a really nice job of deflecting that towards the bottom right corner and is unlucky. It just goes wide, and... You see the time there, and it's past the 30-minute mark. The 30-minute mark of the second half, that is. Mm-hmm. And you've got a chance here to equalize and then go for a winner, and it's really unlucky. Patrick Adjiman's due, Danny. I don't think he's going to have a problem scoring goals this year, and this is the reason why. This moment, to me, I look at it and I don't say, oh, this is a problem. I look at it and say, oh, continue to do this and goals will come for the Charlotte FC squad.
Yeah, I think Dean Smith would say we know Dean Smith would say the same thing, because that's what he always says I don't get mad at missed chances. I get mad when we're not getting chances. This was clearly a big chance. Do check this though, as I freeze frame right here, if you look like if this ball had just got, if Pat had like maybe missed the ball, look at your Penn State guy, Andy Privet, just kind of sitting there right behind him. Do you think Privet would have tucked that thing away in the far post? I'm not, if the ball had flown over Pat's head down to him, I'm not sure. I still like Pat taking the chance. I love the way this was worked off of a short corner. Charlotte FC had double digit corners in this game. I can't remember if it was, I think it was 11. It might've even been more than that, but, and you know, they talked about that in the post game, how they were intentionally working short corners because they knew that they wanted to get the ball to Wilf at different angles. And Zaha said, you know, Westwood to Zaha to Pep back to Zaha. I mean, look at, he's got all the space in the world to send that cross in. If you give us that chance 10 times, it's probably going in the back of the net, 7 or 8 of them. So you're right, John, you can't be too mad about it, but it does make you wonder, like, when is Patrick Adjiman going to get off the board, I guess you would say, and break his duck for the 2025 season? He scored for the men's national team against, you know, poor competition, you have to admit, but would have loved to see him bank. I also feel like if that one goes in, then Charlotte's like, okay, we've equalized, we've facing 10, we can go get another one. Like, I don't think they would have played for the draw in that situation, because there was plenty of time left. So it's really unfortunate. It's a little unlucky, like you said, but it also just – it needs to be better. I'm sure that Dean and everyone was publicly like, hey, we're glad we got that chance. He'll make the next one, da, da, da. But I think behind closed doors in a film session, and Dean famously, he brings each player in for one-on-one film sessions and shows them sort of their highlight reel clip from each game. And I bet he had some choice words for Pat about finishing there for sure in private.
I've seen that type of header miss the frame hundreds, thousands of times watching soccer. I don't think it's a missed sitter. I think it's a really close call. I think it's a tough finish, and Pat almost got it done. I think he'll potentially get it done on Saturday at home against Cincinnati. A really good opportunity for him to get a goal this weekend against Cincinnati. Another player, Idan Toklamadi, a new player. A lot of fans are meeting for the first time this season. He was brought on in this second half and hit the bar.
The fourth official in a 1-0 game. Taken away. Now Adjiman at the edge of the 18. Able to work this ahead. Chance here for Charlotte, and that skimmed off the far post. Their best chance to equalize.
It's really good play. He just runs off Adjiman there. Gets in a great position in such a difficult angle. You just see from this replay, just hits the post.
Hits the post. I shouldn't say bar, as everybody knows the crossbar is referred to as the bar, but he hits that left post. And, you know, one thing, I think that 1-2 between Patrick Adjiman and Idan Toklamadi is a really good thing, something to potentially look forward to. And when we think about Liel Abada on that right-hand side, I think Toklamadi has kind of turned into a really nice forward attacking option potentially ahead of Kerwin Vargas in the pecking order just briefly so far early in this season. I think Vargas and Toklamadi are in a really nice battle for that fourth spot up front.
Yeah, and I'd say Toklamadi's winning the battle at this point. I mean, Toklamadi had the cross that led to the own goal in Seattle. He looked real good here, and I love in previous matches he was subbing in for Ojemong. I think now I liked, you know, needing a goal, I liked to have the two of them on the pitch together this time. And you saw the combination there, two young players kind of getting together and making it happen together. And look at him sprint just with sheer speed and control, you know, into it. He beats three defenders and he beats the goalkeeper, and he just doesn't quite beat the post there. It's a bit unlucky again, as you said. With the Patrick goal, and this is lively. I think Toklamadi looking lively. This is a guy who in our preseason season preview episode I said was kind of a player to watch, and I think I'm being proven, you know, somewhat prescient on that for now. He just looks a player. Toklamadi just looks like a player, you know. And as a soccer fan, I think you know what I'm talking about, Johnny. When it's just like you know it when you see it. He looks up for it every time he's on the pitch.
He does. Dean Smith talked about him post-match. He talked about Liel Abate as well. Let's listen to his comments.
I think he looks really sharp at the moment. I've said that pre-season. You know, he came on and made the goal at Seattle. He's bright. He plays little 1-2s really well. I thought Liel had done okay as well. I mean, he got in first half. He got in second half. I thought he got tripped when Westy put him in. So it wasn't like we weren't getting into good areas and good shooting areas as well, you know. For all Idan's good play and bright play when he came on, he should have made the goalkeeper work with the chance that he had as well. And that's the thing that we've been missing.
In fairness, I think he did make the goalkeeper work. I just think he beat the goalkeeper. I mean, right. Rios Novo's diving.
Well, it's worth, that traditionally make the goalkeeper work means shot on target. And when the ball hits the post, it's not a shot on target.
Tradition. you know, tradition this, tradition schmudition, I guess is what I would say. So yeah. I like Toklamadi.
Me too. I'm excited about him for sure, Danny. I think you kind of had a feeling that this player was going to be potentially flying under the radar this season and making an impact. And I think that you were spot on about that.
Yeah, I think you mentioned the position, the sort of the pecking order battle that's going on. I think now's a good time for me to bring up the SOFA score ratings for all the players.
Nice, good idea.
Go to do that, because what you'll notice is not only was Toklamadi brought in ahead of Kerwin Vargas, but Yuri Tavares was brought in ahead of Kerwin Vargas by 10 minutes earlier. So I don't know. I wish that I would have had a chance to ask Dean exactly about that sub pattern. I did not get that chance, but Vargas only came in for the last 5 minutes of the match. I'm not exactly sure why. I'm sure Dean had his reasons. At one point, a couple weeks ago, our guy Claudio Bonus was reporting that Yuri Tavares had no place in this club and was on his way out, and that Charlotte FC was looking for a new club to ship him off to. All of a sudden, he's coming in, you know, with down a man needing a goal. So I'm not exactly sure what's up with Vargas. It's weird to me, though, to see him taken out, coming in last behind both Toklamadi and Tavares. What do you think?
It's super interesting. And just, I think, a quick note on Tavares and why he potentially got time in this match was the situation. I don't think you could dream up a better situation for him to get on the pitch. You're up a man. Do you need a goal late? You're down one at this point, and you can see what's happening there starting in the 67th minute. Dean Smith is just throwing on anybody that's got a chance to create or assist or score a goal. That was the plan for the final 20 minutes of this match, and reverts back to what was happening there between minute 45 and minute 70. I think that 25 minutes was the biggest issue of the match, hands down. And then finally things started to turn around on him. And Kerwin Vargas is somebody that is not developing under Dean Smith. He's a young player that has what I think is this really strong future, and he's not developing. I can't figure out why, but he's just not making that next step. And this isn't an indictment on Dean Smith, but I think it's important to acknowledge what has happened in the past, is that Dean Smith's time at Norwich, he was really well known for not really having any offensive threat whatsoever. And that was a big issue for that club. And it was a very short stint there. Now, is it fair to characterize Dean Smith based on what he accomplished at Norwich City? No, because I think what he accomplished at Aston Villa is much more impressive than that. I mean, he's a really good manager. But what I'd like to see more of when it comes to this Charlotte FC team is I want somebody like Kerwin Vargas to develop. I want Kerwin Vargas to be able to make an impact on this squad. And if he doesn't, I think that's more of a reflection of Dean Smith and the coaching staff than it is Kerwin Vargas himself.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, again, like, I think you're right about the situation, but it's like, if you think Yuri is your better bet to get a goal than Kerwin, then that's a problem. That's a big problem for me, because Kerwin is a guy who has, you know, not by a ton, but he has achieved more than Yuri Tavares in MLS. He had a brace against Miami a couple years ago. I mean, totally different Miami team, but you get what I'm saying. Like Kerwin, he had a brace in Miami before, so you know Kerwin can go out there and score goals on this very pitch that you're on. I tend to agree with you that it does raise questions, and it I won't quite say it's to the level of an indictment yet, but it's a potential indictment. It's a grand jury hearing, if you will, to decide if there will be an indictment, because I was shocked when Tavares came on ahead of Kerwin there. That's all I can say. I do think it makes sense that Toklamati comes on first, but I was shocked that Kerwin was not the second offensive sub, especially because our boy Danny Higginbottom had said, you know, he said, looks like Kerwin Vargas getting final instructions down there to come on. And that was like around the 70th minute. And then he doesn't actually come on until 87. So maybe something happened on the sideline. I'm not sure. Again, I should have asked Dean about that. And I'll try to at this midweek press conference when he speaks ahead of Cincinnati. But it's interesting.
You know what else was interesting? That graphic. I think that's one of the best graphics we've done here on Charlotte Soccer Show on our YouTube page. Well done, Danny. Look at this. You got the player ratings. You've got the substitutions as well. This is something I could get used to on the show. I really enjoyed it. And how about that? Tim Ream with a 7.0. I wouldn't have put him there. I think the reason why he did, Danny, was because at the end of the match, he was doing really well crossing balls into the middle of the 18-yard box.
Yeah, Ream rebounded big time in the second half, because I think at halftime he was sitting on like a 6.7 and potentially going down. So I can't hate Ream. Ream did what a veteran does, which is try to, you know, use all your guile and your skill and your wits to come back and win a match where you're down. I famously was kind of I was kind of cold on the Ream signing, so I'll always admit that, like, when he plays well, I got to give him his flowers. He was also getting way more advanced this match than he had in the previous two matches. Like against Atlanta and against Seattle, he was rarely getting forward past the half line, and definitely not, you know, to the enemy box. But in this match, he was playing much more advanced, seemed up for it, played full 90, had no problems. But there is a little bit of cover for Ream being signed that potentially is going to be coming into Charlotte FC. It's not official yet, but there is some rumors that Lone FC has struck again, Tom Bogert reporting. We're going to get to that in a second, but I think there's a bigger topic we need to get to first, because that move is not official. I think we need to get into the Lionel Messi of it all, Johnny, because it makes me want to sing. You know, I love to sing on this show, and I got to sing, where in the world is Lionel Messi? Guy has not played. He was on the bench for this match against Miami, and maybe he would have come in if they were chasing the game and if they were down 2-0 and needed to come back against Charlotte. So maybe that's why Mascherano was so happy at that goal. He's like, yes, I don't have to risk subbing in Messi anymore. Like, we can just turtle up and hold for 45 minutes and win. So that's possible. I think Miami fans, I know Miami fans want to see their talisman, their GOAT, their international super duper star out on the pitch, but he hasn't been there. I have some theories, Johnny. I think Miami's really prioritizing the Club World Cup, and they just want to make sure that he's as fresh as possible for
the monetary payout for the Club World Cup? Did you see that information?
I did not.
Let me pull that up as you continue.
Okay, you pull that up. I'm going to say that the Club World Cup is very important to Miami. I'm going to say that the CONCACAF Champions Cup is also important to Miami. Now, Messi has not played those matches either. They had a midweek match at home against Jamaica Cavalier. Now they're going to Jamaica this upcoming Thursday, 2 days from now. They're up 2-0 against an inferior side. So I don't think Messi will play that match in Jamaica. I sincerely doubt it. It's possible he will, though. Maybe that's where he gets his 20-minute run out, just to get his legs going. But Miami's prioritizing the Club World Cup. And then Messi, I think, when it comes to what his goals and his priorities are, as you know, an older guy who's had a lot of mileage and wear and tear on his legs and his body, I think he's all about the 2026 World Cup. I think his head is already I'm not inside his head, and I'm sure he would like to see his club, Inter Miami. You know, he's a bit of a mercenary there, but I'm sure he wants to do well with Miami. He's obviously going to want to do well anytime he's on the pitch. But if I'm trying to get inside the head of Leo Messi, very difficult thing to do. Many have tried and most have failed. But I think that he's totally, solely focused on playing his best in the 2026 World Cup for Argentina. You know, it's a year and a half away right now, and it's here in the United States. I just think he's saving everything for that. I do think he's got a part to play, and he's going to be heard from this MLS season in 2025. But his mind's already on 2026, if you ask me.
Who wouldn't be thinking about the 2026 World Cup?
Tim Ream is thinking the same thing, but he's out there playing 90 minutes. Yeah,
he certainly is. And that is right now the guiding light for anybody in professional football, is that 2026 World Cup on U.S. soil is coming fast and furious, almost a year away. Just a few more months, we'll get into the summertime, and just a year away from that World Cup here on United States, Canadian, and Mexican soil. By the way, that prize money, this is hard to believe. This is truly hard to believe. Do you know what the pot, if you take a guess, the pot of prize money in the Club World Cup would be X amount of dollars?
$30 million.
$1 billion.
Whoa. Dr. Evil time, man. I can't believe I blew that so bad. I'm off by orders of magnitude there.
No, this is a big story. This is a huge story that came out last week. This is what FIFA is doing to really legitimize, if you will, this Club World Cup and make clubs really want to go win it. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, traditionally what you see here in the BBC, you see a headline on this story is fears for domestic impact of 1 billion Club World Cup prize pot, excuse me.
We're seeing
this. This is to say that, you know, if Inter Miami is playing in the Club World Cup, If Inter Miami goes and plays well in the Club World Cup and gets a sizable amount of that $1 billion prize, you are talking about a MLS league changing payout. You're talking about unbelievable, like, finance is so important for these clubs. So this Club World Cup has all of a sudden become an opportunity for a club like Miami, who is playing for this, to become even richer than they already are. And you know what's even crazier is that you got teams in the Premier League that are playing in the Club World Cup as well. Right. You got Manchester City playing in the Club World Cup. If Manchester City wants to go and win this thing, the financial fallout that they're going to get is just absolutely insane. This is a huge story. And it's going to be really fun to see how this money is distributed and how it impacts a potential small club. Because remember, now, there's a lot of rich clubs in the world, Danny. There's a lot of rich clubs in the world, but not all of them are participating in the Club World Cup because the Club World Cup aims to have domestic sides from all over the world in it. You're talking about an Australian team. What about somebody from the A-League potentially making the Club World Cup and getting this payout, Danny?
Hey, maybe. You never know. I think it's going to be the big boys are kind of dominate and get the lion's share of that money. But when you got Messi and Suarez on your side, Inter Miami is certainly capable of doing some things and getting a decent chunk of that $1 billion. And, you know, they have a new stadium. They've been building a new stadium that it's under construction right now, set to open next year. Certainly some Club World Cup cash would be a nice infusion into that stadium fund and recouping the money they've spent there. Yeah. So
there's a couple other money stories I want to talk about.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk real quick about one more thing back to Charlotte FC, because I want you to cue up the Ashley Westwood comments. Because he, for his part, Charlotte FC came into this match and they were ready to face Messi.
No, we planned for him to play, but again, they've shown they're more than a one-man team. But like I said, it's sometimes you wish he would play when they're a man down when he defends. So, but they've got other talented players. They've added good players, and yeah, they're still one of the best teams in this league, but I think from The first half, certainly until the sending off, we were more than a match for them.
Thanks, Westy.
A couple things here. They're definitely not a one-man team, but they are a 10-man team, and they're still pretty good with 10 men.
Well said.
But there was another comment in there, I think, perked your ears up about Messi playing defense. I think, Westy, was that a little bit of shade towards Messi, Danny?
It might have been shade. I'd have to ask Ashley himself about that. But when he said, at times you wish he would play because they're a man down in defense when he's on the field. I don't know if he was referencing the red card or if he was saying Messi doesn't play defense or what was going on there, but you could read it both ways.
The way I read it was that if Messi would have had to defend it as a 10-man defense. Like, I think that is something that we would have seen him do. And I don't think typically, when's the last time Leo Messi has parked in a low block and driven the bus there on the backside? I don't think you see that very often. No, so it's an interesting comment. It would have been nice to see Messi play, of course, at this point in his career. It's too bad that he didn't play. But then again, now that we're talking about it, it makes the loss hurt even more. Mm-hmm. No Messi, 10 men, still can't get the job done. Really tough loss on Sunday in Miami. A couple other money stories that I want to talk about specifically. Here's one, as I remember exactly what the other one is. David Tepper, $70 million guaranteed to J.C. Horn, a cornerback on the Panthers. I just wanted to say that to give perspective into transfer window budget, right? So when we're having conversations about spending money on Charlotte FC, when we're talking about signing players for $10 to $15 or $20 million, just remember that J.C. Horn just got paid $70 million guaranteed for 4 years. It could be up to $100 million. So please keep that perspective right when we're talking about how David Tepper spends on the Charlotte FC team. Because I know the NFL is a whole other ballgame. It's the best league in the world in that sport. MLS is not that. But perspective is important. And a cornerback being signed for guaranteed $70 million, but not being willing to pay $10 million for one of the best players in MLS, interesting to me.
Yeah, I'm going to keep the bit live and say, who are the Panthers again? I don't really know what you're talking about there. But I do think that if you take $70 million divided by four is what, roughly $17.5 million per year. So that's definitely $17.5 million, I'm pretty sure, is more than the entire Charlotte FC budget. And that might be players, front office, staff, facilities, all of it. So, yeah.
When you say it like that, I mean, it's hard to take the league seriously. I'm not kidding, Danny. Like,
yeah, and it's hard to take the league seriously, Johnny, for some people right now because they don't get to see it. There's a lot of chatter about this Apple TV deal.
This is a big story.
Some
this
surprising is a very big comments. Story. Yeah, some surprising comments from the anonymous GM survey. And there's people out there, they won't put their name to it yet, but there are general managers out there who are saying it's time to punt. It's time to get rid of the Apple TV Plus deal. What do you think?
Yeah, we mentioned this at the top of the show, that article in The Athletic. Can we read the quote there?
Let's I think pull it, was, it up.
Paul Tenorio, former colleague of mine over with The Athletic as well. Rotten apple. That's a fun little comment here.
Dan. I got captions for days, baby.
Yeah, you do. I'm going to read it for our audio listeners. One GM told The Athletic, quote, "They have to end the deal with Apple. It's bad for the fans," end quote. Another said, quote, "I think we have to be on more linear outlets. We have to be on ABC, NBC, Fox more regularly because I think a lot more people watched our games when we were in that space. I think Apple and the whole streaming thing is really innovative and it's probably where things will be going. But I don't think that MLS is the leader of that. I don't think enough has been put behind the subscription model. You're a different league when you're a subscription-based league. I don't think the effort has been put in like it should be," end quote. Those are some spicy comments, as always, in this anonymous GM survey that The Athletic does. And they do that across multiple sports. And I think it's some of the best journalism in United States sports. I know a lot of people hate unnamed sources. I know a lot of people hate anonymous quotes. But it is what it is. I think this gives a real window into what kind of discussions are being had behind closed doors in MLS front offices. And my big question to you, Danny, is do you agree?
I'm of two minds on it, Johnny, because I definitely understand from a league exposure and getting people out of their perspective why GMs and folks inside the league would want to have as much exposure and as much ratings as possible. Obviously, that's all good. Ratings bring money and all that. I get, you know, Apple has tried. They've added the Sunday night soccer window. So Charlotte and Miami played Sunday afternoon on Apple TV Plus. Then late, that was the lead into the Sunday night soccer, which is a new thing this year, which is on linear TV. It is in front of the paywall, I should say. And it is a freebie. It was this week it was LA Galaxy, the defending MLS Cup champions, hosting St. Louis. They went down 3-0. They're having a
tough. What channel is that on?
It's on Apple, but it's in front of the paywall. So it's okay. You don't have to pay for the service. So again, you have to go out and see it. You have to go out and seek it, I should say. And I think you have to have Apple TV service. You just don't have to have the MLS add-on necessarily, which is $100 a year. That's where the other part of my mind comes in, because like, I'm not rich, John. I don't, you know, have all the money in the world, but I can find $100 a year in my budget to get Apple TV plus MLS season pass. I mean, I can do that. I'm blessed, I guess, that I can do that. I understand not everybody can do it, but like,
but you're also in the top 1% of people that care about MLS.
Well, that's probably true. Maybe top 5%. So I skipped some games. Let's be honest. I skipped some.
You've done over 200 episodes of an MLS podcast. I mean, that is
true enough. No doubt. We're well on our way to 250. But I think that for me, the guy says streaming is the way. You know, streaming is innovative and where things will going. I don't think MLS is the leader of that. I certainly get that perspective for sure. I think that you don't want to be the first one at the party. It's better to be a little fashionably late than be the first one in, you know, when it comes to party atmosphere. But when it comes to business and money things, sometimes you have to do kind of take a little bit of a hit on the chin to be early and to be established once it does become the thing. So I think it could go both ways. I know that's kind of a milquetoast answer, and we prefer people who take stands on things. Obviously, I get it, but I'm not going to come out here and say, "Oh, they got to get off Apple right away." Because to me, I watch everything streaming. I don't have any linear TV service. I realize that I am part of a growing trend that's still not the majority, but I'm already there. I'm already there where things are happening streaming. I have no problem turning on Apple. I watched a game on I was cooking. I was making some pretty bomb ass ground turkey quesadillas on Sunday afternoon. And I did all my chores around the house, cleaned the house. And then I was like, oh shoot, I got to make some food. I would have loved to have it done before the match started, but I didn't. So what did I do? I have the match going on my TV in my living room. And then I'm around the corner of my kitchen. I got the match on my iPad, and I'm just like, I got them both. So like, that's my world. The world I live in is I watch a lot of stuff on the iPad, on the tablet. And then if I want to watch on the big screen TV, if I have the time, I'll go there. So like, I'm cooking in the kitchen, I'm watching on the iPad, I'm walking back around to the living room, I'm sort of watching it on both screens at the same time. I'm not saying that makes me special or great or brilliant or anything like that, but that's the world that I live in when I'm watching TV. And I think that is a growing trend. And I think, again, I think the term short-term economic pain for long-term gain in this current environment that we live in right now, especially this week, might ring a little bit of hollow. But I do think that MLS ultimately still can benefit by being one of the first leagues to the streaming-only space. I get that some GMs are upset. I would love to hear what some owners think and if the owners of the clubs really share that same perspective that GM was saying there. I don't think it's time to punt. I do think Apple needs to do better. And I think Apple needs to do better by the league. I think in their production, they're trying. Like I said, they added the Sunday night soccer window ahead of the paywall. They've revamped some things with 360. They put more early games on Saturday afternoons. I hope that continues throughout the season. They got rid of the whole, like, you know, 10 games at 7:30 and it's impossible to watch more than one of them. I'm glad they're making strides. They could probably do a little better. I'd love to bring back Friday night soccer that we had in MLS, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. So yeah, I see pros and cons, Johnny. Pros and cons.
Of course, just like anything in business, for sure. No business deal is always going to work for you specifically, especially when you're partnering with another business. So I think Apple and MLS need to both benefit from this deal. I think in the very short term, MLS has. Because of the financial windfall, because of the cash that MLS has received for the mm-hmm. rights from Apple. And you're talking about a lot of cash. But I think hearing you say that, I don't think the debate is between, you know, should this be on linear television? Should this be on Apple TV? My one concern about Apple is they aren't a leader in the streaming sports market.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. They have MLB and they have MLS, right?
Yes. And they don't have, they have one game per week in MLB. Don't they, don't they have like a morning game or a Sunday game? It was over the weekend. When you think about Amazon Prime now, Amazon Prime is a leader in the sports space. They've got NFL football. They've got NASCAR coming as well. You're talking about national sports with huge audiences. And I think 2-3 years from now, MLS might be asking, did we pair ourselves with the wrong streaming service? Should we have tried to strike a deal with Amazon? How do we work in that regard? Because everybody has Prime. Nobody really has Apple TV. And when I say nobody, I'm talking about the random sports fan.
Sure.
And just one other layer to this that I think is really important is the out-of-home viewing experience. Is when you're a new product like Charlotte FC, MLS obviously is not a new league, but the product here is new in Charlotte. A 4 o'clock match on a Sunday afternoon, it would have been really nice to have that easily accessible across the city in restaurants and bars. And I would probably venture to guess that most places didn't have the match on.
Right.
On
a bar has to go out of its way to get MLS season pass, to get Apple TV Plus, and then MLS season pass on top of it. Like that takes determined effort, a lot more of an effort for even a sports bar to put that on than to just say, flip on ESPN or whatever, you know, for sure.
Yeah. So I think that to me, the out of home viewing for the casual fan, for somebody who's out on a Sunday in Charlotte to go, oh, look, Charlotte FC's on.
Right.
Like that actually has a massive impact on accessibility. And when you go out and you spend a Sunday afternoon out in town and you don't even notice that Charlotte FC is playing in the afternoon, I think that could be an Apple problem for sure. So we'll figure it out. We've got one more story to talk about before this show ends. It's not official, Danny. Tell me about a potential new signing, a loan signing for loan. I'm gonna start calling Charlotte FC loan FC.
Loan FC. I love it. Yeah,
we love loaning players. We certainly do like bringing in players on loan, I should say.
Yeah, Zaha's on a loan as a DP. Pep Biel came in last year as a loaner DP, which you don't see too many loan DP deals, but that is what happened.
But we did sign the Alabada, and we did sign Tim Ream. I think that's important. Those two players are signed.
It's true. But
Ashton Westwood is signed as well. So I'm tongue-in-cheek about loan FC, but two of the DPs being loanies are interesting for sure.
Yeah, and the new guy we're talking about here is a left back from Belgian league. I believe he's from Ivory Coast, if I'm not mistaken. Forgive me if I'm wrong there. We you know, you're going to get a lot of information on this show, and every once in a while we will get a fact wrong. You can ask Watford fans about that. But Suleiman Doumbia, for sure, is a left back who's probably going to be brought in for cover. I don't think he injects right into the starting lineup, but with Tim Ream's age, with Tim Ream's legs, with Tim Ream, U.S. men's national, you know, the MLS plays through the international break. So there's going to be times when Tim Ream is gone. We need someone to give some cover there at left back. So Suleiman Doumbia, as you can see, we brought up on the screen here, sort of his transfer history of playing a little bit, you know, he's 28 years old. So, you know, as a teenager and as a 20-year-old, he was playing in sort of the second division of Italy. Then he went to the Swiss league, played for Grasshoppers. Ended up in the French league as he grew sort of into his mid-20s and played for Angers and Stade Rennais and went back and forth between those two clubs for a while. Was without a club after 3 years at Angers and then was signed in January of 2024 with Standard Liège in the Belgian league, and that's where he's been playing ever since. I think he's got 9 career assists. I looked this up. Not necessarily a huge offensive attacking guy. I don't know much about this guy. But Tom Bogert is reporting that the loan is being finalized. We'll have to see for the club to announce it to become official. But I do think it's good to bring in some cover. I think there was some hope at the start of the year that maybe Micah Thomas from the draft could be that cover for Tim Ream. But Micah Thomas was good in preseason camp. But now looks like he'll be playing most of this year with the legacy. And yeah, loan FC is bringing a guy. At least we're trying, Johnny. At least we're trying. I will say Dean Smith kind of gave a little bit of a hint about this that none of us picked up at his press availability last Friday when he was doing his weekly press conference. And he said he walked in the room and people are like, "Hey, Dean, how you doing today?" And he's like, "I'm feeling a bit Liège today." .. standard. And I was like, you know, he's trying to say, like, I feel, you know, I'm normal, I'm feeling standard, but he made a little standard Liège joke, and then a few days later we're linked to a standard Liège player. So I've learned to listen to Dean a little bit closer there, because he doesn't say things by accident.
I don't know if Charlotte FC and Zoran Kroneta is trying to do this, but I do find it interesting that we are bringing in a country mate, if you will, of our new DP signing again.
Yeah, who also speaks French. Yeah, like Adilson Milanda.
Wilfred Zaha is an Ivory Coast footballer. Diambia is an Ivory Coast footballer. I don't know if that's a coincidence, because we surely brought in a lot of Polish guys when we signed Karol Szyberski.
The Polish club, who could forget? Yeah.
So super interesting to me. I hope it happens. Charlotte FC needs some help wide. On the back line, for sure. Help Tim Ream in that position as well. And for me specifically, it's not about a Tim Ream replacement. It's actually more so about getting Tim Ream back in the middle of the pitch. You know, we can forget about this whole, don't break up Adilson Milanda and Andrew Privet. How could you do that? They've played so well. It's like, you can break them up by moving Tim Ream to the inside and Andrew Privet or Adilson Milanda getting a break. Like, that is how a three center back rotation should work. You shouldn't be playing your third center back as left back. Like, that's just not a good solution. It's much better to have depth in that position, Danny. Charlotte FC is playing in three competitions this year. You're going to need a lot of depth at center back.
I do like the depth. I would hate to see Andy Privet on the bench. I love Privet. He and Milanda were pretty broken up there on that goal giveaway. They were not linked very well on the goal giveaway against Miami. But we saw when Privet was benched and Ream was playing center back next to Milanda when Ream first got to the club last year. To me, that was the low point of the season. So I like the idea of depth, but I would not want to see Ream starting over Privet personally. If Ream's going to take a day of rest or whatever, give him the rest. If we're going to bring Doumbia in to play a match or two, you know, a one-off match at left back or whatever, you know, I'd rather see Ream benched and see Privet out there, despite Ream's class. You know, it's nothing personal. That's just what I'd like to see.
It's Charlotte Soccer Show. I'm John Hayes. He's Danny Brams. What an episode. We're on to Cincinnati, Danny, and we've got one message. We've got one message for the TIFOs as we get out of here. This is a brilliant idea from you. You made me laugh, so I'm going to let you play this one. Danny, we've got Cincinnati this weekend, and one of the greatest coaches of all time has a message for us.
What do you think having a 37-year-old?
We're on to Cincinnati. It's nothing about the past, nothing about the future. It's right now we're preparing for Cincinnati.
Okay, do you feel like the talent you have here is good?
We're getting ready for Cincinnati.
It's for the crown baby.
We'll see you soon. Appreciate everybody watching the show. Make sure you rate, review, subscribe. If you like the show on YouTube, tell us what you like about it, and we'll certainly see you next week after Cincinnati. Always a pleasure to do the show with you, Danny. Talk to you soon.